Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Live from MMA Fighting Studios, this is Between the Links. And now, your host, Mike Peck.
Hi, everybody. The iconic voice of Esther Lynn welcomes you to a brand new and very special edition of Between the Links here on MMAfighting.com. Audio only this week because it's just too damn complicated to do video right now with everything that is going on. We are here in Boston, Massachusetts, and it's nice to be in person with multiple people joining the program. This will not be your typical show. We're just going to hang out, relax, and have a conversation. So joining me, the one and only Jose Young's here in Boston, and there's really only two people from MMAfighting.com who should be on the ground here. It's fucking you and I, the New England.
Fucking Boston!
And as you could hear, the sound of Oscar Willis, who I've seen a lot of you, Oscar. Over the last 3 weeks, I've seen you more in the last 3 weeks than I've seen you in the last 3 years.
Can't have too much of a good thing, Mike.
Yes, absolutely. So let's get into this. The reason why we're here, UFC 292. We just wrapped up Media Day. We heard from all the tastemakers. We heard from Aljamain Sterling. We heard from Sean O'Malley, Zhang Weili, Amanda Lemos, and the list goes on and on. I'll start with you, Oscar, since you're the special guest here from the Mac Life. Biggest takeaway from Media Day today, whether it's from Sterling, O'Malley, or anybody else on the card?
I had a couple of interesting takeaways. First of all, I thought, I'm basing my takeaways on the reaction of the fans' comments to the content we've put up, right? For some reason, they've responded well to Aljamain today. And that's been a hard sort of target for him to land every so often. Sometimes he says some stuff, rubs people out the wrong way. I thought today he just came off like, hey, the confident champion. You know, sometimes when guys are already telling you their future plans are to basically leave and try new waters at a different division, some people kind of, that rubs them out the wrong way. I feel like everyone's just kind of like, okay, Aljamain is the champion. You know, he's never had that. Until the Cejudo fight, it felt like he never had that signature win, right? The TJ came in like a limp-armed gimp. And, you know, before that, he had the controversial win over Petey Yan. I think, like, the Cejudo fight seemed to really cement him as champion in a lot of people's minds. And so, for me, Aljamain carried championship air around him. And then on the flip side, I thought Sean O'Malley, not overawed at all by the scenario. Again, like, he didn't want to say it quite so bluntly, but basically he expected this to happen. He's not surprised it happened, and he's here to sort of tick off the last step in what he is perceived as his championship journey.
What I took away, Jose, the most was Sean O'Malley's honesty, and even Aljamain's as well. Like, Aljamain, like Oscar said, very confident champion, what he says he believes, but even the way Sean views this fight, very confident that, one, that this is meant to be, and two, even if his vibe check is wrong, he feels like even if he loses to Aljamain Sterling, everyone feels like he's supposed to lose anyways, so he doesn't really lose a whole lot here, especially with Aljamain potentially moving up to 145. So what was your biggest takeaway from the media day, what O'Malley or Sterling had to say today?
Well, the two of them, I think the big thing is when we get dominant champions, they're
either one of two things. They're hyper-confident, like John Jones, where they're just like, it's a formality that they're going to win, even whatever they say and what the media says. Then you get guys that are like George, that are just like martial artists, or Anderson, where they're just, you know, we're going to go out there and compete in this and that. But like Aljamain, since he won, has been, I might lose my next fight.
He's the biggest realist, I think, in the sport.
I wanted to ask him that, like, out of every champion I've covered over the last 10 years, you're really the only one. Like today at Media Day, he goes, if I lose, Sean O'Malley becomes a superstar. But if I win, then the Funk era begins. It's a win-win for the UFC. Yeah. And it's very bizarre. You don't hear that a lot from a champion.
Well, even this week I saw on social media he had this like list from 2019 of his goals and stuff like that. And even if you're reading, like, this is not the mind of a fighter. You know, if a mind of a fighter, you're seeing words just like kill written over and over again in frantically darker and darker ink. But he had like, I want this much money in my bank by this much, this date and stuff like that. He's always been a very like sort of, his feet are firmly on the ground.
Yeah,
I think that gets lost in translation a lot with what he does, but actually he's a pretty, like, I don't think Aljamain has ever said, like, let's take him, we'll get on to him for sure, we will, but Ian Garry, right? He listened to Ian Garry talk and listen to Aljamain Sterling talk, couldn't be fucking further apart, because Ian basically thinks he could probably fight Jesus and knock him out. And Aljamain is very like, I could lose every fight. Every fight I go into, I could probably lose. Right. And if I lose, this is what will happen. It's very interesting to have a champion who's, like Jose said, been very dominant, but is also aware of the realities of man.
that wow. And it's the flip with O'Malley. You see fighters like, my biggest thing is like, I want to be UFC champ, I want to be this. Sean O'Malley's like, I always knew I would be a superstar.
Yeah, they're, and he even said, I want to be rich and famous.
They're similar in the sense that they know what they want, but they're also realistic that it might not happen, or they're realistic in their trajectories. Like, I remember Sean O'Malley did an interview. It might have been on the MMA Hour where it might have been Ariel. They're like, oh, Ariel's or Aljamain says he has, like, a torn bicep or something. He's like, yeah, that sucks for him. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, that sucks. Like, that sucks. So, like, he's very realistic. He's looking at dollar signs. Alderman's looking at dollar signs. And I kind of like it. It's contrasting, but both avenues are kind of refreshing in the sense of challenger and contender.
Yeah, I feel like this is almost a repeat of the Cejudo fight in terms of the quote-unquote vibes. But O'Malley's just a lot less... He's a lot less annoying than Henry was, especially because Henry had those fucking goons following him everywhere.
Yeah, so the
fact they're not there. But so I get the same sort of vibe from both guys. Like Aljamain, where he's like, he says this, he says that, that annoys me. And then he pauses and goes, but I also can kind of find the comedy in it.
Yeah.
One thing that I found interesting, I like both of your takes, was I asked Aljamain, a very fantastic question, actually. I asked him, you know, did he feel Sean O'Malley has the it factor? Because as I was flying to Boston on the decade-long flight yesterday, I was thinking, like, it's kind of weird, right? You know, this guy's got the it factor. This guy's got the it factor. And you never really stop to think about what it's like to be the guy fighting him. Because basically what you're saying is, like, hey, you're fighting a guy with the it factor. You're basically saying, hey, you're a boring bastard. And this guy's really cool. So I was kind of curious to see if Aljamain felt this aura. And he just doesn't, I don't think.
There are a lot of interesting things that were said. Aljamain, like you mentioned, that either Sean's going to become a superstar or it's going to be the start of the Funk era.
Yeah.
But at the same token, he's already said, when he was asked what the reaction of the MMA community is going to be if you beat Sean O'Malley, because he doesn't get credit for any of his wins anyway, it's just going to be, Sean shouldn't be here in the first place. And on the flip side, I feel like Sean is really taking, and Jose, you could probably speak on this, a very smart, like, pro wrestling esque approach.
Because Sean?
Yeah, because Sean is putting over Aljamain as the greatest bantamweight of all time.
I felt the exact same thing.
But at the same
token, when Aljo is kind of talking about Sean, Sean even said, like, well, what's that going to mean when I beat him? He lost to the dude who shouldn't be here in the first place. So I this fight has become really interesting. So I guess, like, the big question, and I'll get to you with the same thing, Oscar, is, is this the biggest bantamweight title fight of all time? Because it's a main event. It's in Boston. There have been, like, bigger named, more interesting
matches.
Wasn't
TJ Dom in Boston as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a fight. But it was
this is the second biggest bantamweight fight they've had in Boston.
Well, so you feel like that fight is bigger than this one?
No, I think the biggest bantamweight fight, and the one I was in attendance for, and I know MMA Fighting doesn't like to talk about the event, but Dom Uriah 3 at UFC 199, that felt really big because that was... Like, Dom had beaten TJ, and then he turned around quick to fight Uriah. Uriah was saying all the right things. He's like, I remember that narrative. Uriah was like, I was going to retire. The only reason I'm fighting still is because I wanted the trilogy with you.
For me, I still think it's Dom versus TJ, because actually Dom's return to championship level from the ridiculous shit he had to deal with It's probably one of the most underrated sports returns of all sports.
That's the most underrated fight in the history of MMA.
Oh, just but you know, it's like the master versus the pupil, the build-up. To me, that was the biggest bantamweight fight of all time. Now, that said, if you wait 5 minutes and then you get Cody Garbrandt going out and kicking the fuck out of Dom, that's something to be, you know, it's like, it's always about the aftermath of what happens. For me, that one was. I think this fight is one thing that came up a lot because everyone was asking fighters for their main event predictions. And one reoccurring theme was, we still don't know how good Sean O'Malley is, mm-hmm. right? Because he beat Peter Yan, yes, by maybe. And then, you know, before that, he stopped Pedro Munhoz, sort of. You know, there's a lot of, like, question marks about all the shit he does. So no one really knows how good he is. And it reminds me of Conor. And I know Sean probably loves that comparison, but if you think of Conor, when he came up, he beat, you know, this guy. Oh, but he hasn't fought a wrestler. Oh, he beat Chad Mendes, but Chad Mendes came off the couch. You know, there's a lot
broken
of stuff, until
like
he gets in there with the champion, and then he's either good or he's not. And I think this Saturday, if Aljamain wins, it could make Sean look absolutely shit and not like he doesn't deserve to be in there with him. If Aljamain wins, it could look terrible for Sean. But I kind of thought Peter Yan was going to make that happen, and Sean doesn't let it happen. It's a very interesting fight because I think there's still an X factor about what Sean's actual ability.
Now, from a business sense, the UFC is never going to come out and flat out admit this, but they are hoping Sean O'Malley wins this
fight.
They're
poisoning Aljamain right now.
Yeah, 100%.
They want Sean O'Malley to win. It flips this division upside down. Meritocracy be damned. We can get the Cheeto fight.
I see Marab fall down in rankings on Tuesday.
Or Marab. I mean, Corey Sandhagen. Like, how pissed is Corey Sandhagen going to be, too? Because, like, Corey put the wood to Marlon
Vera. They'll give Corey it.
So let me ask you this. Like, honestly, from a fan's... Thanks, we got some chicken wings coming.
Yeah, that's right.
From how you view the sport, Oscar.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's different than what the UFC is hopeful for. Aljo wins. He's vacating and moving up to 145. Opens things up a little bit. We have probably a 3, possibly a 4-horse race.
This is if he wins, yeah?
If Aljo wins.
Okay.
And if Sean wins, then it just flips the division upside down. So what do you kind of hope the aftermath is going to, the tale that's going to be told? Is it better if Sean wins overall? Because then we kind of throw meritocracy out the window. But if Aljo wins and moves up, then we can have a more meritocratic thing. We could see a lot of different matchups we may not get if Sean wins on Saturday.
Bantamweight is the one rare exception to this rule. Well, you know, obviously you see they play fuckery all the time at other divisions and you're kind of like, ugh. But bantamweight is kind of the weird one where it's like, I don't really give a fuck about meritocracy because right. any fight you do in the top 10 is a banger.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. Like, if you do Sean O'Malley versus Cheeto, banger. Corey, banger. Marab, banger.
But could, you know, be what banger. I mean? Like,
it's, but it's one of those things that division is so stacked, so top, like, amazing. It doesn't really matter. I think it's, if Aljamain were to lose and move up, that hurts him a lot because I don't think I'm telling any tales where it doesn't feel like the UFC.
He's fighting Mavzarev Loyev.
Doesn't feel like the UFC's ever been really on the hype train for the Funkmeister. Whereas if he wins, you can't really deny him a fight against Alex at some point, right? But if he loses, that guy ain't fucking sniffing gold forever.
Yep.
So if you're a big Aljo fan, you want him to win and move up there and try and get the bulk fight. And if Sean wins, I think it does bring in an interesting new era. But stylistically, I would say it's an interesting new era until he meets Marab. You know, because Marab, I think Marab stylistically
honestly,
is the worst guy in a division for him. Other than, you know,
honestly, we're just waiting for Umar to get there.
Really?
We're just waiting for
even
Umar
over
to
Umar.
Get there. Yeah.
Over Umar, over Marab.
Yeah. I think right now, bantamweight reminds me of what lightweight was before Khabib beat Dustin, where BJ was kind of the default answer for best lightweight until Khabib took that over. Right now, Dom kind of feels like the default answer for best bantamweight until Umar shows up. I really believe that.
Even if Aljo wins on Saturday, and he has the
record by himself. If Aljo wins, I will put him number one. But I think there's still a lot of fans that just don't view Aljo as the man.
How much is that based on his personality?
Like? Yeah, it's 100% based on his personality.
Yeah. You think? Like, see, I'm curious.
Like, there was an argument that Benson Henderson was the best lightweight ever, but he was just a boring guy that no one gave him credit.
Which is crazy considering his WEC run.
I'm joking.
You get some bangers in WEC.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. That's not UFC, though, is it?
I mean, technically, it's like in the same family, right?
He beat Frankie, and I love Frankie.
So you beat him twice.
Allegedly, because I didn't think he won either.
I think a lot of people feel that. I think agree. If you go back and rewatch those, you might feel a
little differently. I think the first one he won, the second one he lost. Anyway, continue.
So I know you love these questions, yep. Jose. You love these hypotheticals, mm-hmm. The what-ifs, what happens next.
You know me, Mr. Hypothetical.
If Aljamain Sterling wins and vacates the title, you got to feel pretty confident Merab's going to be in there, but maybe not.
I'm not.
Who's the fight? Who's going to be who will be the vacant title fight in your eyes?
Actually, no, I take that back. I wouldn't be surprised if they do Merab Cejudo.
Yeah.
Just because it's Merab, he has the Aljamain tie, he has, like, I think he has the second longest win streak going right now. Who has the longest win streak? There's, like, a fighter. Is it, like, in all weight classes in the UFC? Merab's, like, second right now.
Probably Islam, is it?
Islam.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And then I think it's him and Aljo might be tied. So I think Merab...
John Jones, maybe?
I mean, John's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
He's on a one-fight win streak. He lost to Dom. Merab Cejudo is probably would probably be the betting favorite, only because Corey and Umar and everyone are hurt. It just kind of becomes the default.
I'll agree with you. I think it's probably Merab Cejudo. I'm going to say it from a behind-the-scenes angle. I bet they do that because they think Cejudo's the best chance of beating Merab.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd rather Cejudo is champ than Merab.
And then I bet, depending on how long Corey's... I think no matter what happens on Saturday, Cheeto fights O'Malley in December. Regardless of who wins and who loses, that's the fight in December. And if Aljamain wins, vacates, and we get Cejudo-Merab in December, I bet they do Cheeto versus O'Malley for the number one contender.
Love it.
And then Corey's hurt, and Umar's hurt.
He's going to fight Umar. Like, they're still going to fight each other.
Unfortunately.
After all this, they're still going to fight each other.
100%.
And I want to see Corey Sandhagen fight Sean O'Malley so bad, just as a high-level martial arts fight. But, like, we're so far away from that happening, unfortunately.
This division just is going to look very much different.
Second best division in MMA.
Yes, but you're absolutely right about that. The co-main event, Oscar Willis. Do you have anything more you want to add about this main event first?
Just out of curiosity, how do we feel Aljamain does at 145?
I think it's tough because because Volkanovski is the best fighter in the world. I think he's a perfect fighter. But Brian Ortega is big.
He is.
He's a big
guy.
Never
fights, but
like Ilya Topuria is a big guy.
Yeah. I could see Aljo doing damage against Yair.
Oh, for sure. I think it'll be very similar. Like Conor, like Eddie was a very good matchup for Conor, but Habib is not a good matchup for Conor.
Right.
You can't comment on that.
Eddie Alvarez was the hardest fight in the division. Conor's might have. That's the fact.
But I think it's going to be matchup wise. I don't like Aljo. I favor Aljamain against over everyone at bantamweight. Outside of Umar would be tough and Merab would be tough. Obviously, he's never going to fight Merab.
I don't know if I can say that on record. Anyway, Karen, I heard that trading partners spar, and sometimes it's actually not as close as you think. Apparently, one dude just smokes.
I'm very sure.
I'm sure that happens a lot.
Yeah, but anyway.
Islam's on record saying Usman Nurmagomedov beats him every time.
Yeah, well, but I think Aljamain, being the realist that he was, he told me, and I can't remember if it was off record or on record, but it was ages ago, so I'm going to say it. He never wanted to move up to featherweight because Zabit knocked him out. And it's sparring. And so he was always shook about that. But I think as he's filled out, and, you know, I don't know if this is true. I'd like to ask him, actually. But surely if you look up at the featherweight champion and you're like, I think I might be bigger than that guy.
Yeah.
That's probably got to give you some inspiration, too. Now, I would be in line with Jose that Volkanovski is special. But Aljamain is also at the point of his career where it's like, try it.
Yeah.
Give it a go.
He said it perfectly. He's like, I feel bad for people who don't want to, like, test themselves.
Yeah, as well.
Right. Dude, yeah. Aljamain is kind of the man. And
he's a
everyone,
good guy.
Everyone hates on him. And I hate that people hate him.
Which is
they
so
hate Volkanovski too. And Israel. They hate all the
Is there any fighter that's just beloved?
Conor McGregor.
Right. Right. That's fair.
Frankie Edgar probably was.
Yeah.
back in his heyday?
I mean, Robbie Lawler at the end.
Yeah.
Lawler's a good one. Justin Gaethje's probably is,
no,
is a good
I
one.
No, I bet there's one
the
fighter
Diaz's.
Out there.
The
Diaz's. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple fighters. Look, Conor probably has a problem with everybody. He could dig down
Conor
deep.
That's true. Conor probably has a problem with the guy that says hello to him when he's walking down the street.
Well, how do you say hello to him? Did he have the wrong tone? You don't even know, Jose.
Did you look him in the eye? If you didn't look him in the eye, then
no, the
that's,
problem
that's
is you did
problem.
Look him in the eye.
Oh, okay. Not all of us are the same. Just like in the women's strawweight division, we have Zhang Weili.
Great transition.
Getting ready to take on Amanda Lemos. And Oscar, I want to start with you because...
Perfect. Perfect start.
I enjoyed Amanda... Like, Amanda Lemos brought a quiet confidence to her. She really, truly feels like she is better than Zhang Weili across the board. Yet not a lot of people are giving her a chance. This fight is flying under the radar. She is flying under the radar in this one. This is a pretty good, an interesting matchup on paper, is it not?
Listen, you know, every time you get to the big leagues, we've got to see how good you are. And Amanda's been there, and she's been proven and tested at this point, all right? She's fighting for the world title, and that means something special. Now, Zhang, would you argue she's more well-rounded? Of course you would. But Amanda has that X factor, that power that can equalize anything. It's a little bit like Sean and Aljamain, we were just talking about. So I think... There's nothing like fighting for the... Listen, you get some people who fight for the title. I don't want to say any names because that would be shitty. But you get some people who fight for the title and they walk to the cage like they're going to die. I don't think you'll get that from Amanda on Saturday. I also think there's something in it that Zhang's not the most intimidating woman alive. You know, she's a killer in the cage, but outside she's very nice and sweet and stuff. I actually think that helps. You know, it's not like Amanda who's laughing at you. Like Amanda Nunes laughs at you when you're trying to be mean. I think there's something about Zhang being quite nice that gives her challenges a little bit of confidence. Do I think Amanda's going to pull it off? Nah. But I think it's nice that she feels like she might.
Yeah, and that's always a good thing heading into this fight. Which funny is Oscar said, like, Zhang doesn't seem like the type of fighter. She's not very intimidating when she's up at the microphone. There was one moment today where she was asked about Amanda's comments about being better than her everywhere, Jose. And at one point, the smirk kind of left her face, and she got very wide-eyed, and then very quickly was like, we're just going to find out on Saturday. What did you take away from Zhang? Obviously, she loves being in Boston.
Yeah, that was fucking jokes, by the way. He kicked off, like, I know you love this city. I was like, she does? And he's like, you fought here before? I was like, she did.
She's never fought here. She was a guest fighter.
Yeah.
She got Tom Brady.
She got to meet Tom Brady.
Tom Brady.
It was like the best thing ever.
Remember
Tom from Boston?
He used to play for the Patriots.
I thought they were New York. And Karen.
New England Patriots. We're in New England.
Yeah, there's one word in there that matters, son, and it ain't new.
Yeah, then you guys wore red coats and marched in a straight line.
Oh, yeah, this
woods.
Is where the Tea Harbor thing was.
The Tea Harbor. Before we get into that, I want on record, the actual start of the revolution was the burning of the Gaspee in Warwick, Rhode Island. Bunch of Rhode Island just got hammered and murdered a bunch of
people.
Well,
now you're just bringing up old stuff.
Yes. Anyway, to get back to the current battle that we are dealing with, what was the question?
Zhang Weili. Zhang Weili, the way she carries herself and has those moments of being absolutely terrified.
Zhang Weili is one of those nomads that just travels around and just wants to, like, absorb MMA knowledge. Amanda Lemos, I think meritocracy-wise, is the right matchup for her right now because it was to the point where, like, she fought so long ago. I think it was the last MSG card, right? Like, I wanted...
Switch on the belt, yeah.
Like, how many odds are the next ones where you're like, oh, could she be the next one to fight Zhang Weili? It's like enough waiting. Who's highest ranked? Amanda, she hasn't fought Weili. Go ahead. I've heard a nugget that they might want to do Asia again at the end of the year. So I bet they want to stay.
Yeah, but I think that's a little UFC thing.
It is, but there might be a card before it, like in Singapore last year. That's a big maybe. But if they do go to Asia, then... I would imagine they want to do Zhang Weili versus Yan Xiaonan. If Amanda wins, they could just go, hey, congratulations on winning. Go defend it in Asia.
Yeah.
Against Zhang Weili. And if that's the case, then Yan Xiaonan fights Tatiana Suarez. But I like this fight. I think it's, of everyone that Weili has fought, like, yes, Rose head kicked her and she has power. The second fight, I think there is a legitimate argument that Weili won the second fight. I didn't score for her, but I won't tell you you're wrong if you scored it for her.
For some reason in my head, I thought she did. I was literally about to be like, no, why have they done a trilogy?
She's 0-2 against Rose. Rose is 0-2 against Carla. Whaley's 1-0 against Carla.
Well, Carla's a dominating force in that division. Right. What are you going to do about that?
Correct. Rose is now up at 125, but of all the people I've mentioned, like, Whaley has never fought someone that just has, like, thudding power.
She did. She fought Andrade and murked her in 30 seconds.
But Andrade will, like, melt you. This is, like, you get hit and you feel it, like, for extended periods of time.
Yeah.
Like, Rose and Jessica Andrade will turn your lights off. Whaley will punish you into victory. I think... I'm not picking Lemos to win, but I like this matchup because Lemos kind of presents stuff that Whaley hasn't faced yet. Now, I don't think she does things better than her opponents, but I think she is a complete MMA fighter. It's probably her last run at the title. I like the matchup. I really do. Whaley said, even was like, yeah, we knew we were going to fight her. So I pick Whaley to win. I think she's not the best fly. She's not the greatest strawweight ever. She has ways to go. But I think right now she's the strongest in the world. Well, second best. Tatiana's out there.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great division right now. I would like to see...
Yes, Oscar, what are your thoughts on women's MMA, and especially 150-pound division?
I think they're so talented, dude. That made it sound so sarcastic. Mike just stared at me like, what are you doing? No, I think...
I'm waiting for something.
I wasn't going to be offensive.
Okay.
Tatiana Suarez is obviously the uncrowned champ in a way. I was actually, you know, my first reaction to that is I was actually really bummed that Joanna confirmed her retirement yesterday. Yeah. I really was like, fuck, go on, girl, give it another go.
At MMAfighting.com?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, she did. But yeah, I was kind of bummed by that. I really thought she was going to come back. She spoke in Abu Dhabi, she came up to me and Brett, and she was just like, we're like, how's life? And she just like nearly started crying. She's like, I just miss it so much. And I was, you know, I presume she wasn't just crying at the sight of Brett, but she was like, you know, very emotionally, like she wanted to come back. And I guess she must have found peace. But anyway, what were we talking about?
Yeah, I also didn't think she was retired until like right now.
Yeah, now I'm pissed about it. Unless she's doing, never mind.
Yeah, they're even like last year International Fight Week, I felt like the door was not even closed. It was still open, and she could just run through it anytime she wanted.
Dude, she could have come back, fought Carla, fought for a title. They could have made a BMF belt for the women.
They should have.
It should have been against Andrade, the rematch. Those are the two BMS at 115.
Dude, when you think about that, she murked Andrade. That wasn't close.
It was 50-44 on my scorecard.
She killed her. Yeah.
But it was a masterclass, for sure.
And now she's gone.
Now she's all gone. Two last fights I want to talk about. I mean, there's obviously other storylines. Follow MMAfighting.com for the rest of those, but... You mentioned him earlier, Oscar Willis. Ian Machado Gary, the man just knows how to talk.
Yes.
He can talk forever. He can.
Yes, he can.
He can just sell it, man. And he's putting this thing over. He's very confident. He feels like he's carrying the weight of this card on his back. People aren't going to wake up at 5 a.m. to watch Aljamain Sterling versus Sean O'Malley, but they'll wake up at 5 a.m. to watch me. Gosh darn it. Ian Machado Gary versus Neil Magny. Not the same fight that we were getting. I was very excited for the Jeff Neal fight. But I kind of feel like this is a very showcasey kind of a fight for Ian Machado Gary. But Neil Magny was a little low-key spicy at this media day as well. Your thoughts on both of those guys today?
Well, I tweeted out the who in the good fuck is waking up 5 a.m. to watch Aljamain and Sean O'Malley. They're waking up for me. And the first reply was, I'm not waking up for a Neil Magny fight. So that's kind of... I think Ian...
That's such a good answer.
It's good, isn't it? I think Ian is... I think Ian is the sort of generational evolution of what Conor was, right? I think all of us were in our prime, shall we say, for Conor's rise up. And there was a period in our lives where Conor could say or do anything that could not miss. Like, anything he did, I was like, that's the funniest person I've ever seen. Oh, my God, he's so witty. And I feel like now when Ian does his thing, I'm often sat there being like, my God, he's still talking, you know? And I think, I wonder if some of that is basically because I'm older than he is and he's appealing to a younger audience than I am now, you know? Is he the Generation Z who are like louder, more brash, the Jake Paul school of thought who he's now in a partnership with? That kind of, I've left the jury out on if he... on what I feel about it, really. I'm just kind of curious. I'm like, is this guy just like the new version of something that, and I'm being the old man now, you know? In terms of the fight, I was hyped for that Jeff Neal fight as well. I probably wouldn't go as far as to agree with Ian that his t-shirt made Jeff Neal pull out. I think Neal I'm going to be trying to be as polite as I can. Neil Magny has often been regarded as the gatekeeper of the division. You get that title for a reason. You get that label for a reason. And then when you get that label about 8 years ago and you're still there, I think this fight probably looks in one way, you know, one direction.
Yeah, I mean, you want to call him a gatekeeper or a litmus test? You can also call him Mr. Reliable, Jose, which is a good thing about Neil Magny. Sure. There ain't a lot of guys in Neil's position, guy with 30 fights in the UFC.
How many people
were going to take this fight?
How many people were begging to fight Khamzat? How many people were like, I'll fight Shafkat?
Yeah.
Like, that dude, I say what you want about his fighting style, that dude does not say no.
No, but...
Some might say he's the most winning fighter in the history of the welterweight division.
Is he really?
Most wins ever. Past GSP.
He's been around. Is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good for Neil.
He has more wins, and you know who that infuriates? Chael Sonnen. He goes, allegedly, Neil Magny's fighting. Allegedly, he has the most wins in welterweight division. Wouldn't know.
That makes me just think Chael and him are best friends, because Chael's...
I know, I love it. I love it.
Well, guys. Anyway.
We do have Marlon. We got Marlon Berger, Pedro Munoz. Yeah.
Well, hold on, before we move on, babe, what's your thoughts on Ian? Like, you know, he's up there. First of all, he no-sold my call out of Derek from Benner, which I remain upset about. I wanted some traction on that. But, you know, do you get what I mean by he's like the generation after us? Do you get what I mean?
I mean, being...
Or do you just think he's an annoying twat?
I mean, being the real old man at the table, I get where you're coming from, where I kind of have that, like, grandfather syndrome. You hear a song on the radio and your kid hates it. Oh, but this is, like, what I grew up, like, loving. And maybe I am just kind of aging up, but I also... behind the scenes talk to Ian and he kind of keeps that same energy.
I don't think he's putting on a character.
Yeah, I definitely don't think he's putting on a character.
I think he's quite a sweet guy.
He is.
I think when you get on stage and say the three best talkers in the history of the UFC are Conor McGregor, Chael Sonnen, and me,
oof,
you have a lot to live up to.
Yeah. He's got...
oof.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Oof.
He's got work to do. He says things. When his debut,
I was like, this guy's... But he's one of those fighters that every time they fight, you can actually see the improvement. But not just
a little bit, massive.
Like, oh wow, he's like, he fucked up D-Rod.
Yeah.
Who did he beat before?
That was the Song Kanan.
Yeah, that fight. He got dropped.
He got dropped in that fight, but
then he smashed the Sonnen, right? Third fight. He beat Gabe Green and he beat
Jordan Williams, because he beat him with the same cross that Connor did.
But he's good. Like his first couple of fights, he's getting tagged, and I was like, "How are you getting tagged by this guy?" And then against D-Rod, it just didn't. It was clean.
Didn't break a sweat.
The one before that was clean. I think Magny's getting all respect to Neil, but I think first round finish probably.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think Ian will win, but I just think Neil is. He's not been knocked out. Has he?
Yeah, but it always comes.
Yeah.
Lorenz Larkin.
But that was like a beat down. That wasn't like a melting.
But it always comes, though. It always comes. Yeah, always comes around this age.
He's been submitted. Now, if Ian submits him, because Ian's been submitted by Maya, RDA, like Gilbert Burns, those three names are probably the best three grapplers in the history of the welterweight division. If Ian Garry and Shafkat, if he submits Neil Magny, I'm like, okay, he's unbelievable. If he just, I don't know.
If he kicks him in the... If he does
three rounds,
the
Neil Magny is not... To beat Neil Magny in three rounds is tough.
I actually think what Ian should do is do, like, what he's doing, like, being Mr. Positive while being Mr. Brash. I think slowly but surely he'll become the biggest heel in the company.
I don't...
You know, because I think everyone will be like... He'll be like, what was that guy who in the WWE used to run around being like,
Hacksaw?
Bo Dallas.
Bo Dallas. He's like Bo Dallas.
Leave.
Yeah.
Bo Dallas.
That's Ian Garry.
Could be, yes.
He's the Jason Jordan of
That'd be fun.
that's a great comparison.
I think you nailed it. Where he's kind of the product of, he saw what worked for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And like he's taking bits of Chael, he's taking bits of Connor, this and that. And I know, people hate it. Like people above us, like in the age demographic, hated Connor. Some of us that lived in Europe, or had ties to Europe, got tattoos of Conor McGregor's quotes on their body forever. Right? Right? You probably know.
I heard that happened.
So some of them might have that.
They might have been going through a rough period in their life, Jose. You don't know.
Why, do you know someone?
Nah, right. Listen, if you got to feel somewhere, why not feel unbeatable?
Who said that?
Conor McGregor did.
You should get that tattooed on you.
I should.
So anyway, like, I get people hate. So I look at it through, like, I'm like, is because I am 100% with Oscar. There was a point in time where I thought anything Conor McGregor did, I just, like, consumed. Not because I was a massive fan, but I'm like, he is so, you can't miss him. I don't feel the same with Ian. But we're talking about him. Yep. Like, and that's the thing. Like, we glazed over Chito Vera, who is...
We haven't even got there.
So exciting. We're talking about Ian Garrett. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. I mean, Chito good for bad, he does evoke emotion, and that's very important in the fight game, whether you want to pay for him to see him win or pay to see him get his ass kicked.
Sure.
It's a good quality, and I feel like he will become one of the big
Chito Vera by decision. That's my pick.
Hold on. You can either be like the next Conor. Oh, do I want to put this on record? Or you could be like Paddy, right? Paddy was a massive star, one slip up, and now everyone seems to just fucking hate him. Ian, if Ian like loses or gets gifted a decision, he's Paddy, and then it's all negative.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. But I'm also very, because he seems, if he beats Neil and then he fights whoever in December, like he says, and then he goes to Ireland, I have no idea what the reception will be.
In Ireland?
Yeah.
I'm cheering because I've got no one else to cheer.
I feel like Ian's kind of in the middle. And even if he does lose, he's going to take a ration of shit up for it, at least real quick. But if he shows up to like a press conference or he does an interview right away and just takes it on the chin, and he's like, yeah, man, dude was better than me. And he just loses really well. I think that's going to be a good thing for him. I think him losing, it stunts him a little bit, but he's so super young, man. Like, he could just get right back into it.
Well, also, I think he's a real talent as well.
Yeah,
he's an actual talent.
I think, and his size and sort of stat, like, physical frame for that division, it's going to be a problem.
He's not like Hamza, where he's a massive welterweight. Like, he's good for the division.
No, he's good for the division, but he's long, and then, but then again, yeah, fuck it, carry on.
So you're going Marlon Vera by decision. Seemed pretty confident there. Marlon Vera, Pedro Munhoz. I like this fight a lot. I think it's going to be really good.
I think Pedro is very good. I think he beat Cody at the right time. Like, Cody would have... Like, he just knocked him out because Cody fought like an idiot. I think Cody's better than Pedro Munhoz on a good day. The Cody Garber that fought Dom Cruz smokes Pedro Munhoz.
Well, the Cody Garber that fought Dom Cruz that night beats a lot of dudes.
Correct. But the TJ that fought Rafael Sunsao, UFC 200, beats everybody.
Yeah.
So this bantamweight's great, but I don't know, man. I just think Marlon Vera's a better fighter. Yeah. I just think that. Pedro Munhoz is super talented, super durable, super dependable. I can't believe they've never fought.
It's wild.
Like, look, he's lost 4 of 6 or something like that. Who's he lost to? Like, literally, literally champions. So he's like the Neil Magny of bantamweight.
I love it.
I feel like for me, the interesting thing about this fight is kind of Chito, because I think to a degree, Chito has, I don't want to use the words been found out, but he is a guy who does, he's like Romero in a way. I don't do a lot, and then I kill you. You know, that's the sort of vibe I get from Chito. That's been the last few couple of his fights. And sometimes that makes you look awesome, like against Dom Cruz, where you get beaten in every round and then you kick his fucking nose across his chin. Or you look like you do against Sandhagen, where you just look like you shouldn't have been there and it was weird that you were there. Pedro Munhoz is an active guy. Now, is it a thing where the more activity you face is the more you're going to get out of Chito? Possibly. But I don't think this is like a guaranteed win for Chito Vera, because I think if he continues this sort of like pause, wait for that perfect opening and then fire, every time you do that, it's a risk, because that perfect opening might not land. You know, Tyron Woodley did it for a bit and didn't help him every so often. You know, if you're going to wait too long, MMA of all sports as well, sometimes it's better just close your eyes and just swing at the count. You know what I mean? So it's just,
yeah.
I think this fight is dictated on which Chito shows up, for me.
Yeah. I mean, I understand why Pedro Munhoz is a popular dog pick this week. I love the women's fights. Andre Lee, Natty Ice. We got Marina Moroz, Karina Silva, Gerald Meerschaert, Andre Petroski. That fight is probably not going to the cards.
Hell
we got the
no.
two tough finale fights. Cody Gibson, Brad Katona, Kurt Halbo, Austin Hubbard, Gregory Rodriguez, Dennis Tallulah. Another fight that probably ain't going to the cards. But we got to end with this. Jose, no one is talking about Chris Weidman returning after everything that he's gone through. The broken leg, coming back and fighting Brad Tavares. I mean, no one is talking about this at all. And I think it's a pretty big story. Now, the man may not be for everybody. I understand that. But this is to the horrifying injury that this guy suffered, everything he's gone through to come back, I'm really surprised this isn't being talked about more.
I'm surprised that it's he wasn't a media day. I think Oscar was in agreement when we got the list. We're like, where's Weidman? Like, that seems like a no-brainer, but until Israel burst onto the scene, Weidman was kind of accepted as the second greatest middleweight ever. Now, if you want to argue that Israel has surpassed Anderson, I don't know about that yet. The fact that he won the title back is a big deal. I think that is huge for me. If he goes out there and dusts DDP, Sean Strickland, Hamzat, he's the best ever. That's not even a question. But why, like, I think Weidman retroactively is hugely underappreciated in MMA. Like, his fight against Lyoto, I said when Oscar brought up Dom TJ, I was like, that's an underrated fight. Lyoto Weidman is a super underrated fight. Yeah. The build-up for Vitor and Weidman is an underrated build-up. Like, the Rockhold, Luke Rockhold versus Chris Weidman is everything Whitaker versus Adesanya 1 was. Like, the two best fighters from parts of the world that are just natural rivals, like New Zealand, Australia, LA versus New York. Like, do you remember that? Like, that was Magic Johnson versus, like, Isaiah Thomas type levels.
Larry
like,
Bird.
It was unbelievable. So losing to Rockhold, fine. Losing to Romero, fine. The Gegard one, a little goofy with the knee thing. His Kelvin Gastelum, he got dropped. He's literally only lost to former champions, and I include Dominic Reyes in that category because he beat John Jones. And then Uriah Hall, his leg shattered.
Yeah.
I think he would have beaten Uriah Hall. I honestly do. Brad Tavares has been in the UFC longer. He fought my former radio co-host Aaron Simpson. That's how long he's been in the UFC. I think after Matt Brown, Brad Tavares is the longest tenured tough contestant, right?
He might be. He's up there.
So this what is a good statistic.
I think
is he longer than Lozon?
Ooh. I forgot Lozon. Is Lozon retired?
No.
I thought he had retired, no?
The Lozon's Lozon.
Shouldn't he be fighting here?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's retired then.
Yeah, Lozon. Lozon is the longest tenured because he's tough five. And then I think Matt Brown was tough six, and I think Brad Tavares tough nine or eight, regardless. This is a good matchup. I think it's the right opponent for Chris. I can't believe they've never fought. But, yeah, it's odd that the UFC is not building him up.
Yeah. What do you think, Oscar?
About Weidman Tavares?
Yes.
I think, in a weird way, providing he doesn't get like brutally knocked out, if Weidman goes the distance and loses on decision, that's still a win, right?
100%.
What he went through, I think everyone is, including me, going to have a squeaky arsehole until he throws the first kick. But yeah, for me, this fight is not about Weidman. Weidman was saying he's going to mount a title defense and stuff like that. Okay. But I think really, like, all of us who respect Weidman, his longevity in the sport, what matters to me is after you come back from an injury like that, just seeing the end of the fight is the biggest win you can have. And if he were to lose, but it was decision, I would love to see him walk away. Like, hey, your last image was not that on the canvas, it was standing up on your own 2 feet. Weird expression, I know, but that would be cool for me. If he wins, you know, then we can talk about his ceiling at this age and after this sort of injury. But for me, it's one of those weird ones where Chris has done enough and he was cool and he beat Anderson twice and everything. It would just be nice if he could just leave the arena like in good health, and I think that'd be a win for everyone.
Completely.
And if I was Uriah, I'd never fight again, because the curse will eventually land, and your legs are going to get
snapped. It's like when Anderson came back and beat Derek and beat Nick Diaz.
Yeah. It was just like just be okay.
And then he won, and he cried.
Yeah.
I bet Weidman, win or lose, is going to be the same thing. I think the middleweight division is better with Chris, because he's a good fighter.
He's a good fighter, good name, good style for some of those guys.
100%.
And he's just so much older, so much more worn weather than, you know, like there was that talk, they were going to do the Rockhold rematch.
Original main event at 199.
Yeah, he'd have probably battered fucking Rockhold, to be honest, I think.
No,
what, 199? No, but I think they were talking about it after Rockhold lost to Blaukovic. I think they were talking
about
it.
The original main event at 199 was Rockhold Weinman.
Yeah, and then your boy Weinman came in and fucking then, left.
Larry! And then the one-eyed monster came in and won.
How dare you, sir? He'll be here. I'll have him stab you.
And then they were going to do the rematch again, but I can't remember who got hurt this time.
No, but
at
2:30.
At 2:30.
Anyway, we're sort of, yeah. Either way, I hope Chris comes and gets what he needs to get out of it, but I don't necessarily think he needs to still consider this a career. But hey, he's his own man, and we've thrown dudes in worse shape in there, so
yeah, that's a good point. All right, I think we're good, because we're gonna be talking about this card for the next several days leading up to Saturday, but wanted to get a BTL done, a little bit of a different vibe, just kind of sitting in a hotel lobby and chopping it up, so
having a couple cold ones.
Yeah.
You know, you're so lucky there wasn't a bar nearest us, so I could be like, more.
It feels weird not doing this with John Morgan.
I know. Shout out John Morgan. It sounds like he's dead now, but no, shout out John.
R.I.P. John Morgan.
Shout out to John Morgan.
Do it off camera.
Yes. But we'll have the press conference coming up later on today as you hear this. We will have the... God damn it. There's another media day that's going down later on today with the Boston guys, Joe Lozon.
Yeah, you might be there on your own now, Mike.
Rob Font, Calvin Kattar, and Corey Sandhagen, I believe, are the three gentlemen. Then we'll have the press conference. Weidman will be at the presser,
yeah.
So we will get to hear from him, and then all the weigh-in fun on Friday, and then all the fun on Saturday.
You know,
so.
Weidman comes out to... I might be on a tangent right now, but you know Weidman comes out to...
Back down.
Yeah, we've got to change that.
What are we going to do?
Real American Hulk Hogan thinking. But he comes out like this. You know the slow bit. It's like, I am a... But he comes out on crutches.
Oh, so he does
he goes,
the...
Dun, dun, he throws the crutches.
So he does the Willy Wonka thing at the beginning where he comes out all slow and then falls down and somersaults.
Willy Wonka shouldn't have been allowed near children. Anyway.
Yep.
That's a perfect way to end the program.
Wander Franco, that's what
I mean. Oh, God. All right, now we're out of here. Thank you all very much. Stay tuned to MMAfighting.com for UFC 292 coverage. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.